Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sky's the Limit Radio, your inspiration station with coaches Wendy, Krista, and Shermin. Our goal is to search out and share with you the latest news about how to become and stay empowered to make the most transformative lifestyle or business building choices. For 30 minutes, each Monday at 12 noon U.S. Eastern Time, you will have the opportunity to hear inspiring interviews with coaches specializing in a variety of life-transforming areas. It is our intent to provide you a once-a-week break of inspiration to carry you throughout your week. Your co-hosts are Wendy, who is a business transformation coach, Krista, who is a healthy lifestyle coach, and Shermin, who is a success coach. It is important to know that all of the concepts and information presented during any of our shows are for educational purposes only. They are not intended to guarantee results of any kind. Please consult with professionals before embarking on any lifestyle or business-related changes. Again, welcome to Sky's the Limit Radio, your inspiration station. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another week's episode of Sky's the Limit Radio. This is Wendy, your host, and I'm delighted to have Chris Armstrong with me today. Chris is a certified coach, culture consultant, and award-winning diversity and inclusion advocate. He is highly sought after for his unique facilitation skills and his deep passion for diversity and inclusion. He has facilitated more than 600 off-sites, culture sessions, and emotional intelligence sessions over the past 3 years. As well, he is a frequent keynote and panel member for Women's History Month and Black History Month events. Today's show is titled Presumptive Communication, The Inside Track, and we'll be talking about the human challenges we have with communicating from our authentic self in an effective way. So welcome to Sky's the Limit Radio, Chris. This is great to have you here. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, this will be good. So let's just jump right into the questions. I've got a few questions for you. So according to your articles and your podcast, it sounds like you really specialize in helping generate authentic and equal relationships both in love and at work. Can you share with our listeners why you choose this line of work and how it was that you got to this point in your journey?
Well, I generally, start by talking about why I'm not a dating coach or why I don't call myself a dating coach. So I don't like the idea of helping someone be someone they're not, you know, helping someone who comes to me and says, hey, you know, I've met this girl and, you know, I really want the date to work out well. You know, what should I do? As in, what should you do should be anything other than what you would authentically do. I don't like that. I have seen too many relationships not work out because we try to be someone that we're not. And then eventually our real self comes out and we've spent a lot of time. And of course the person on the other side has spent a lot of time and nothing of substance comes out of it. So between that and reading headlines that go something like how to make her love you in 24 hours or, you know, how to make him pant for you and all that sort of stuff, I just can't tolerate it. So I got into coaching about 10 years ago, you know, went through all the training, and I remember thinking, if I'm going to do this, I want to be the alternative to the sort of popular headline-chasing coaching or sort of advice giving so that I can help actual real relationships as opposed to sort of surface relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it's so, yeah, you see those headlines, it's so ridiculous, like have your love in like 20 minutes or something, or meet your love, the love of your life. So that doesn't sound really authentic at all. So I'm really glad that you're doing the work that you're doing. Is there any particular reason why you chose this line of work, though, as far as anything else? Like, why did you select coaching in general?
I think it's because I was into sort of a very corporate job and a very corporate line of work. And honestly, it was, I got to say, it wasn't very hard. The work wasn't very hard. And the reason I don't think it was hard is because it was all about relationships. But while I was thriving and, you know, moving up fairly quickly and finding success fairly quickly, I would look on the other side of the aisle, if you will, and I would see other people with my same skill sets, if not better skill sets, or my same level of training and education, if not better. But they were finding it hard to make it. And that's in the workplace. And then outside of the workplace, I would see, you know, friends and colleagues of mine just suffer or struggle with relationships. And I basically asked myself, what's the difference between what I have and what I was able to achieve versus what they have and what they're trying to achieve? And the difference, quite frankly, is I had a leg up and had nothing to do with anything except my skin color or my gender. And that says a lot about the diversity and inclusion piece. And on the relationship side, I think the only thing I had was a deliberate look into why people do what they do, why people think the way they think. So I figured, if I'm going to bring everyone else closer, if the idea is really equality, if we really actually care about it and it's not just words on a piece of paper, then the only thing we need to do to close the gap is bring people who have information to people who don't have information, or to sponsor people who otherwise don't have sponsorship and who can't get by on strictly their education and their qualifications. As you know, as dumb as that sounds, it's simply true. That's what, you know, discrimination is and all that. And I just wanted to be the person who could bridge the gap, to be honest with you.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. So why do you think that it's such a challenge for people to just to have these relationships go bad? What is it that you can help them with to help them make an impact, just to help them become authentic in their relationships? Why is it so difficult for them to just be authentic?
I think a couple reasons. I think one, we're not very confident, and you're not really going to be able to be authentic if you're not confident. That's a fact. Because if you're not confident, what you're basically doing is you're saying and doing things based on how you believe other people will respond to it. So if I am confident, I don't worry so much about how people will respond to it. It doesn't mean I'll be indifferent, but it does mean that I'm not going to question everything I'm about to say or everything I'm about to do so much that whatever I'm doing isn't really me. So number one, confidence. People have to be confident if they're going to, in fact, be authentic. And I think the second thing is, and it talks a little bit to confidence, we are so hung up on the judgments of others that we will eventually either automatically react to or get in front of what might be the judgments of others. And the reality is, people who judge us are judging us not because of who we are, but because of who they are or not. But we don't realize that. All we know is that somebody on the other side of the conversation or on the other side of the aisle is looking at us or saying something about us that's in a critical bent. And because we're not confident, back to that first one, we take it in and it eventually shapes us. So if we're shaped by other people's views, opinions, and judgments, we are by definition not shaped by our own. So that's another reason we find it hard to be authentic.
Gosh, I had never even thought of that before, how you have to be confident to be authentic. But now the way that you explain it really makes a lot of sense. You know, our family is, most of us are musicians, and there are times when my daughter or some other members of the family have to perform somewhere, and sometimes they get a little nervous because the audience is going to judge them on their performance. But if they go out there and are confident in their performance, then it doesn't matter to what people think about that. That really aligns with that whole concept. So, wow, thanks for that, bringing that up. That really makes a lot of sense. So what would you say are 3 to 4 different findings or epiphanies that you've helped clients discover in your work with them?
Okay, so I think on the relationship coaching side, a couple of things I would say is just the power of the incomplete partner. So, to the point about, people have to love themselves if they're going to be in a relationship, or the point about being able to be authentic, which starts with confidence. So much of our lack of confidence comes from the judgments of others, but the other comes from the simple belief that we have, and it's a very closed belief, that we have to be perfect. And it's ironic because we will fret about our own imperfections. We'll let others' judgments weigh on us because we're like, oh, see, we're not perfect. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And yet, if anyone were to ask us, have we ever dated someone who was perfect? The answer, of course, is no. But so even just asking clients, have you dated someone that was perfect? No. Have you ever had a best friend that was perfect? No. Have you ever had a boss that was perfect? No. And yet, 5 minutes ago, you shared with me, all these imperfections you have. So it's really enlightening, I think, for clients to go through the conversation about the incomplete partner. And frankly, I didn't make this up. I mean, there was a Harvard Business Review study done a few years ago, and it was about the workplace, but it was talking about the power of the incomplete leader and how an incomplete leader is really the most confident leader because they don't care about what they know or don't know. They understand the difference between the two, and they manage accordingly. And as a partner, if you can understand that you're imperfect and your partner might be imperfect, two imperfect people can actually be, pretty darn good. I would say another thing is needs and wants. This is sort of it's a very repetitive thing for me to get with clients and ask them, okay, so you've dated a while, you're frustrated, can't find the one, although I don't believe in the idea of the one, but you can't find somebody who fits you perfectly. What do you need?
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, well, what do you mean? I'll say, tell me some non-negotiable things you need. Not wants. Wants are negotiable. Oh, I need somebody who's honest, and I need somebody who's polite. Okay. Well, dispense with the obvious ones. Tell me what else you need. What are things you absolutely have to have in order to be, in order to be happy? And they struggle. So we have to go through this business where I say, tell me your physical needs, and we all have them, right? You can't invent chemistry. Tell me what your personality needs are. As in, if someone didn't have these personalities, you would not be happy. And then tell me the lifestyle needs you have. Let's talk about politics, religion, children, alcohol, drugs, things like that. And at the end of it, they're flabbergasted because they say to themselves, well, I dated this person for so long, and this ended up becoming a showstopper. And now I can see why it's one of my needs. Yes, let's figure out your needs so you don't waste time. And I'll just add one more piece, and that is that when I do this with women, who tend to be more of my clients, frankly, they get hung up on the physicals because they'll say, I can't have physical needs. I'm not shallow. And I'll say, look, it doesn't make you shallow. You can't invent chemistry. What are you attracted to? Women, more so than men, feel the need, pun intended, to play off this notion that demand that someone meet a particular standard for fear that they'll be considered judgmental or shallow, and it's simply not true. We know what we need. We know what's made us unhappy in the past. Those are things we can't keep bringing into a relationship.
Mm-hmm. So is this how you help them attract their partners, just by going through what they actually need? And then what's the next process after they have discovered what it is they actually need? What do you do after that point, once
yep.
they get to that, once they get to that realization of what they actually need?
All right, good question. Because frankly, I don't help people attract. I help put people in positions where two people can come together. So the next step would be I ask them questions around, what do you currently do today? Tell me your pattern. Do you go to work every morning? If so, tell me what that's about. If do you work out at the gym 3 times a week or whatever? I don't ask them. These are things they share with me. But my question to them is what is your routine? And the reason I ask that in context to all this is, are you having a hard time meeting people, or are you having a hard time meeting the right people? And if you're having a hard time meeting people, let's talk about your routine. And I find clients who will say, well, I'm sort of a homebody. Well, okay, there's a starting point. Let's figure out why you're a homebody, and let's get you out of that homebody mode. And other people will say, well, I give myself plenty of opportunity. I'm online all the time. And I'll try to talk to them about the importance of balancing meeting people online, which has obviously become very popular, with also putting yourself out there. And it's an epiphany people realize when you sort of put in front of them, okay, so you're online, you know, X amount of hours a week. But then the only times you really go out is to meet the people you met online. So socially, where's your social equilibrium? Where do you put yourself in positions that you can have healthy dialogue if you're either at work, online, or on a date? So I help people create environments and spaces to put themselves in so that, A, they can meet more people. B, they can become more socially conscious and socially healthy. And C, so that they can see relationships as more than just sexual or romantic in nature, because a lot of the reasons why we struggle with relationships is because with the advent of the internet and texting and all that, we've lost our way with communication and or depending on our generation, we never grew up with it. So part three would be find the environment. Put yourself in an environment. Let me help you get to an environment that meets your authentic self. And the only other thing I tell them in part three is don't be someone you're not. Don't try to go to bars if you're not someone who drinks. Don't try to go to the club if you're not someone who dances. Because we tend to want to put ourselves in situations that we think sound popular and that there's lots of people. But if you're awkward or uncomfortable, even if someone sees you, they're going to see you in your awkward, uncomfortable state. And how is that helping you?
All right. Interesting. So would you recommend anybody to check out the dating sites, those online sites where people put a profile in? And I'm wondering what you think about that approach as well.
I do recommend people do that. It has become the new normal, so let's acknowledge that. And I find nothing wrong with it, to be honest with you. My feeling about it is that as long as you know what you need in relationship to what site you're going on. So, for instance, if you're not really looking to date, and there are people who are just looking to sort of have fun and have a good time, and I have no judgment of those people at all, as long as they are going in with eyes wide open and they're communicative with whoever's on the other side, right? Like, don't leave someone on. But based on what you want, go to the right site. So don't go to Match.com if you really want a relationship. They're more relationship-oriented. On the other hand, don't go to an OkCupid or a Tinder if you are relationship-oriented, right? So know what you're looking for, know what you need. And the only other thing I would tell people about going online is don't go online until and unless you're ready to really expose some of who you are, because the reality is, everything's illuminated when you're online. Your pictures are out there. Your story is out there. And if you're one of the people that are going to go online, but in the contents of your profile, you're going to say something to the effect of, well, I don't really want to share a lot of myself online. Just send me an email if you want. Well, you might as well not go online at that point. So know what you want. Go to the right website based on what you want. And if you're going to put yourself out there, put yourself out there. Otherwise, stay offline or do Tinder, something that's a little more cut to the chase.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't think a lot about that. They just go online, is my point.
Right. Okay. So according to your bio, you do a lot of the diversity inclusion work. So could you just tell us a little bit more about what that's about? It sounds so interesting.
Yeah, we're at a time in our country where, in my opinion, and this is strictly an opinion, I think it's almost worse than it's ever been. And I say that knowing, not having experienced it, obviously, but knowing what we went through with slavery and with discrimination and women's suffrage. Back then, we knew what we didn't have. And when I say we, I mean, women and minorities. And so did most of America. They were, open racists and men who were happy not giving women rights. Today, we have the illusion of equality, but we don't actually have equality for the most part. So I think it's actually worse in that context. And the other part of it is, and what I do, so companies have become very proactive in doing unconscious bias training, you know, addressing sexism in the workplace and all that. But I've been to a number of those training classes, and essentially they don't get to the point. We deal with equal opportunity from a compliance perspective. We deal with diversity by talking about cognitive diversity, like, oh, you know, how important it is for, you know, people to think alike. Yes, and you say that, and there's going to be 10 white men sitting at a table saying, we're cognitively diverse, none of us think alike. We don't get to the real conversations, okay? Why is it that 96% of a particular organization can be white male, and yet when you ask the management, they'll say, hey, look, man, we're only supposed to hire and promote the best qualified. Okay, well, let's talk about why the best qualified 96 out of 100 times looks like you. Because either three things are true. Either minorities aren't capable, which isn't true, of course. Either you're racist, which might be part of it, I don't know. Or there's something else missing. So I come in with my business partner, and we have real discussions. We do real training. We make people uncomfortable to the point where their biases will come out. And then we say, now you're actually ready to talk. Because once you can acknowledge what your biases are, or in some cases what your isms are, if you're sexist or racist, or if you can acknowledge the hindrance of some of your policies and procedures, which of course come from your biases and your isms, then we can actually make some changes to those things instead of just saying, hey, there's an issue, you know, it's hard to talk about, let's send people to training. But when they go into the training and they walk out, there's no, or there's rarely, I shouldn't say no, that's a generalization. There's rarely any aha moments, and there's certainly rarely any change. So what I do for companies is I help get to the root issue, because I'll give you one statistic real quick. If you look at the survey of any number of companies, I've looked at 150, over a 10-year period, you will see the same six things that the workforce complains about every single time, and I mean that literally. And the workforce will complain about the same six things, no matter how many structure changes, leadership changes, or policy and procedure changes there are. And that's because none of those are root issues. Those are symptoms. People are the root issue. So we have to change mindsets in order to change behaviors, and we have to change behaviors in order to change culture. We don't change behaviors. Here's what we do. Somebody complains about somebody sexually harassing them, and within 5 minutes, the person has resigned on Twitter. And then the company says, see, you know, we've gotten rid of it. That's, you know, done and gone. Well, let's be real. Before the person was done and gone, they were promoted. And that whatever they did, whatever they just got caught for, wasn't the first time they did it. And certainly he or she aren't the only people in the office doing that. So there's a culture within the organization that allowed that behavior to A, happen, B, fester, and C, sit unchecked. But the person resigns and we're like, let's move on. No, what is the root issue? My job is to get to the root issue. I'm tired of it. I hate racism. I hate sexism. But we take the safe approach, and I don't take the safe approach. I take a professional but raw approach to exposing what are real issues around race and gender.
So what are those six? You mentioned that there are six things that are, you know, in the survey that they're always the same.
Yep.
Could you share that with us? Share those with us?
Yep. They're poor leadership, poor communication, poor accountability, unfair promotion, reward, and hiring practices, overly bureaucratic processes and procedures, and limited resources or budgets.
Interesting. And so, is that how you help when you coach people around this? Is that how you work around those six things? Or actually, we're at the point where in the interview now that I'd like to just ask what kinds of programs you might have, or how people can get in touch with you who resonated with some of the things that you were talking about. So I guess that's what I can just ask you about those. Like, do you have any programs coming up, or a signature program that you offer?
So I would say on the workplace side, I do. The six things I mentioned to you are the symptoms. But I have come up with 12 root causes for our diversity and inclusion challenges, which are consistent. And my business partner and I do a lot of consulting with companies and provide training on what we call addressing sexism, the real deal, and addressing racism, the real deal. And they've literally, genuinely gotten significant praise for their candidness, but also their professionalism, because you can't have it both ways. You can be professional and candid. And I would say on the relationship coaching side, I have done a number of courses, and I do have one on Daily OM, DAILY OM, called 7 Weeks to Self-Love. And it's really about, I didn't pick the title, by the way, I don't like the title, to be honest with you, but it's really about how to literally, genuinely find out who you really are and fix your own self-confidence issues before you get into a relationship, because you can't really be in a relationship unless you actually love yourself. It's a cliche, but it's absolutely true.
Mm. And what is the website so people can check that out? Or how
the website?
Yeah,
go
ahead.
It's a dailyom.com. So DAILYOM.com.
Okay. That sounds great. So this is actually a conversation. I wish we had another hour or so to talk. But I really thank you for coming on the show. You had some really great information for our listeners. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me. Seriously, it was very good. And maybe we can do another time.
Oh, that'd be great. Yes, we can definitely do it another time. And thank you, our audience, for tuning in again today at Sky's the Limit Radio. We appreciate you for listening and following us and we hope that you enjoyed our show today as much as I have. As always, the best way to get more information about upcoming shows is to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ Sky's the Limit Radio. Please feel free to share your thoughts, comments, and feedback on our Facebook page. We love to hear from you. Or you can visit us at our website at skiesthelimitradio.com to stay up to date on all the good stuff we have coming up for you, and where you can get your Sky's the Limit Inspiration Kit. To listen to recordings of past shows you may have missed, go to blogtalkradio.com/ Sky's the Limit. You never know, you might discover that one episode that could make a difference in your life. Until next time, everyone, and remember, the sky's the limit to what you can do. Have a great week, everyone. Goodbye. Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.